It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Apple is now officially bigger than Microsoft and Google. Bigger than Sweden. We'll talk about it with Mike Elgin, Alex Lindsay, and Andy Iannacco. Stay tuned. Mac Break is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 286, recorded Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2012. One more thing. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Collaborate face-to-face remotely with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code MACBREAK. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, and unlimited backup for your computer files. Just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK and get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Smile Software. And PDF Pen for the iPad, the mobile version of Smile's award-winning PDF editor. Use it to sign a contract, make corrections, fill out an application, and much more. Get it for just $9.99 on the iTunes App Store now. And learn more at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers all your Cupertino needs. Joining us now, going from right to left, Mr. Andy Iannacco of the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth at a lovely Valentine's. Don't say anything. It's Maxfield Parish meets. Say hello to my little friend. I don't know. What is it, James Bond? What is it?
This is the cover to Elektra Assassin number 4 by Marvel Comics. It's cover art by the inestimable Bill Sienkiewicz. This is Elektra Nachios, you see in the red there, with the person that she is held into mystical thrall into assassinating the devil-imbued candidate for the nomination for the President of the United States. You got cherubs and seraphims with swords and guns.
It's great artwork. I love it.
Nothing says Valentine's Day than bullet holes and a nice drop.
Semi-automatic weapons. It does have a very Maxfield Parrish kind of feel.
Yeah.
Without all the Bill layers of oil.
You will never be able to spell Sienkiewicz. You're proving your geek credibility by even pronouncing Sienkiewicz correctly. But if you do a Google search on Elektra, E-L-E-K-T-R-A, you'll find some really cool art by him.
Also here with us, as you probably noticed, for the first time in ages, Mr. Alex Lindsay. It's good to have you back. Welcome home.
It's good to be back.
You were traveling all over the world. I mean, going from New York to Vegas to I don't know where else.
I had a lot of trips. I'm leaving on Thursday for London.
Oh, my God.
And it turns out I might have a stint in Italy next week.
We miss you when you're gone, you know.
No, I'm going to try to log in from wherever I am next week. Hopefully it'll be here.
Good. Good. Also with us, Mr. Mike Elgin, who is the man of the moment on Google Plus. Mike has written for many magazines. He continues to write for Computer World and Time and others. It's good to have you, Mike.
I followed Mike's lead.
What did you do? You went to Google Plus as your blog.
Google Plus is now my blog.
Yeah, if you go to Elgin.com, it takes you right to Google Plus.
The last time you were on it is when I started thinking about it. And then I just decided that that's the direction I was going to go after I saw what you were doing, and I love it.
I like Mike. I like Google your motto: the world's only lovable technology writer.
President company excluded.
That's very cute. Well, I'm not a writer, so I don't feel like I'm insulted by that. Andy Iannacco might be, though. He's quite the writer.
Well, that's okay, because I have documentation. I actually have a postcard from a foreign land claiming that I am beloved in this person's home country. So I claim international belovedness.
There you go. So you can, you know, there's room for everyone.
There's lovable, and then there's beloved. Which is higher? I don't know. I don't know which is the higher.
I'm 3-syllable position. Beloved, by the way. Okay.
From this is from our chat room. 10 reasons Twitter is sexier than Facebook. I don't know. This Mike, you're gonna say I just Google Plus, baby. This is Euro RSCG's Worldwide's annual Valentine's Day survey. The sex lives of social media users. Oh, yeah, really? Like they have sex? Okay.
Does tweeting make you sexier? It asks. Maybe so. 40% Twitter users describe themselves as sexy versus 28% of Facebook users.
They are legends in their own mind.
What percentage of Twitter users are sexually adventurous? 42%. They are legends in their own mind versus only a third of Facebook users. Skilled lovers? How many Twitter users are skilled lovers?
Says who?
About that's a third question. Of them. Themselves, self-identified.
This is self-identified. Well,
yeah.
They're skillful, but only for a very short amount of time.
I'm skilled. Yeah, right. Skilled, but quick. If I only could have one for the rest of my life, sex or romance, that's a tough one.
I think Facebook's going to go towards romance.
Thank God we don't have to make that choice. 41% Twitter versus 33% sex. 67% on Facebook. You're right, because it's all the women on Facebook versus 59%. Wait a minute. There's something wrong there. Oh, no, that adds up to 100% going sideways. Got it.
Right. For Twitter users, those people are way too slim.
Yeah, really?
Sorry, or are we talking about something else?
How many Twitter users worry their sexual fantasies and behaviors? By the way, it's Valentine's Day as we record this. Just so if you're wondering, what the hell is Leo doing?
Why are we talking about this?
I had to acknowledge the day of love.
I got some
candies. Was St. Valentine the guy who expelled the snakes from Ireland? No, that was somebody else.
No, that was,
what did St. Valentine do? He took a bunch of arrows or something. What did St. Valentine do? Look, you can see.
Nobody knows.
Wikipedia-ing it right now. I can see you reaching over to your computer.
Either you or me.
Yeah, I could do it. Who's going to get there first?
I'm here.
He's the name of several, 14 in all, martyred saints of ancient Rome. There were 14 Valentines.
Turns out that was a bad name to have in Rome.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did any of them die by arrow?
Jeez, I don't know why we celebrate a day of love. Because it doesn't make... Okay. Historian Jack O'Rourke has made the case. The traditions associated with Valentine's Day, documented in Geoffrey Chaucer's Parliament of Fools and set in the fictional context of an old tradition, has no tradition before Chaucer. Chaucer invented Valentine's Day.
He invented it.
So, never mind. Okay, going back to our much more important Twitter versus Facebook. What percentage of Twitter users worry their sexual fantasies and behaviors aren't normal?
I'm not normal.
What do you want to guess? Nobody's guessing.
80%.
21% of Twitter users versus 14%.
They got a horse in there.
That's a donkey.
Right.
Have had a romantic, sexual, or erotic relationship. What do you mean? Are not virgins? Is that what they're asking? 27% of Twitter users apparently have... What? There's something wrong here. Only 20%. Yeah, well, no wonder they think they're great lovers. Sexual. Only 20% of... online. I missed the online.
Okay.
27% Twitter users, 22% Facebook users. I'm done with this. We'll stop now.
Although a tube CRT is a definite turn-on for me. I'm sorry. You got to be flat panel.
You're not turning on the tube, are you?
Oh, my God. So let us talk instead about the iPad 3. That's what I'm going to have a love affair with, the iPad 3. Now, everybody from the Wall Street Journal on down is now saying March 7th will be the date. I have no idea why they believe that, but that's what they're saying. Apple, of course, is not saying. Mike Elgin, you have any inside dope?
I have some dope, but it's not inside. Kidding.
You Twitter users, you. Oh, no, that's a Google Plus joke.
That's right. Yeah. No, I think I have a theory. I don't have any inside information, but one observation is that the Wall Street Journal is pretty good with this stuff. They have a good track record of when they give a specific date, it's usually good information. But I have a feeling that, you know, I think that the iPad 3 is going to be a big play for FaceTime on the tablet, which is not a good experience on the current iPad because the display is not good, the front camera is not good, and the connectivity is not good. And I think that I'm guessing that the iPad 3 will be George Jetson with nice display, nice camera, and
cool?
Yeah, fast connection.
The story originated, all things D last week said it'll be the first week of March. Yeah. Wednesday is traditionally when Apple does these. And Renee Ritchie, writing in iMore.com, says, according to sources who've been reliable in the past, Apple currently plans to hold their announcement Wednesday, March 7th. Renee is saying that a Retina display, 2048 by 1536, quad-core A6 SoC, and LGE. No word about cameras, but Mike, you would want a better camera on this, too, if you were going to improve the FaceTime experience, yes?
Yeah, the camera is a surprising number
of VGA, right?
Yeah, especially, I mean, the front camera is awful. Right. And, imagine if the image that you saw when you're doing FaceTime on a tablet were super high quality and, that would be amazing. That would be completely different. It would catch the Android tablet people off guard. I think it'd be a really good selling point. And you can imagine the commercials with the grandma and the baby and, like, you know, the dog and, you know, people interacting with each other over FaceTime. It also helps Apple deal with, the excitement over Google Plus Hangouts to the extent that that exists. There's just, I think that FaceTime didn't do what they hoped it would do on the iPhone. People kind of said, oh, that's cool, and then stopped using it for the most part. I mean, some people use it. I use it. But, I think Apple believes in FaceTime, and I think they want to see it on tablets.
They need to do something. They kickstarted, I think. They're not. I don't think they're particularly beating Hangouts or Skype.
My son requests it every time I'm gone.
He's like, three.
When are we face talking?
Face talking.
He's 4 years old.
I think on the phone it's hard also because you have to hold the phone. So I can imagine. I think a tablet on a stand.
Right.
And then that becomes an interesting device. I think you're right. I think, yeah. Mike, it's very advertisable. Whether it's and I think it could drive sales. Andy, you agree? You think FaceTime, that this next iPad will be about FaceTime?
I'm not sure if it'll be all about FaceTime. I think it's going to be mostly about improving the reading and the viewing experience.
Retina will also do that, of course.
Excuse me?
Retina will also do that, of course.
Yeah, of course. As far as the camera goes, they could hardly do anything but improve the camera that's there. Both the front and the rear-facing cameras, they're just... They're bar bet features, where you win the bar bet by saying, see, we put a camera in the iPad. It's not a good solution, but it is a camera. I think that really that was a differentiator that they decided to put into the iPad too, because, well, they got to start improving things. Also, FaceTime, like you said, was going to be a much bigger deal a year ago or a year and a half ago when they started designing the iPad 2 or finalized the iPad 2 than it became. They do need to just do something to jumpstart FaceTime, but the fact that consumers aren't really jumping on board the FaceTime bandwagon indicates that this isn't a feature that Apple's customers find important right now. So yeah. I think that usually that to me means that Apple's not going to really bust their guts trying to figure out how to fix a problem that for a feature that people aren't actually using. But the Retina display, you still get people who are saying that I love reading books, I love viewing pictures, I just wish that this display were easier to read.
They did put a better camera in all the notebooks. The HD camera,
still not very good.
Still not that good.
I mean, it's fine.
To a certain extent, it's a little bit like saying that it almost costs more money to put a CD drive rather than a DVD R drive into a notebook. I mean, the prices of these components fall so low at some point that are you really going to save 3 cents per component to have an inferior product? You may as well just upgrade it.
I mean, if you compare it to something like the Logitech C910 is in my opinion the best USB camera in existence now. I mean, we bought like 30 of them and went through them all, and it's by far the sharpest.
Seem very sharp.
Well, that's the whole thing, is that once you've used the C910, you come back to this, and you almost don't want to turn it on anymore.
I think that the way I think Apple thinks is not that they see video conferencing out there and want to improve video conferencing. They see a lot of excitement and activity around social networking. So what do people do with social networking? Bunch of kids get together, a bunch of people get together, and they're like, they take a picture of themselves and they upload it to Facebook. I mean, this happens.
Huge.
100,000 times an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, and Apple has no answer to that, no way to hijack that behavior, that impulse to share, look at us, this is what we're doing right now kind of thing. And my guess is that Apple can use FaceTime to replace that behavior, not to do the same thing, but if you have a tablet, that means that multiple people can view a FaceTime, A phone is kind of like one person is doing FaceTime. A tablet turns it into a group FaceTiming with another group. And I can see them wanting to hijack that behavior. What I don't see yet is whether the carriers can handle it.
Right. Well,
and also, I think that what makes a lot of those video conferencing pieces compelling, in my opinion, is stuff like what makes Hangouts so compelling is that you have a bunch of people. It's not just a two-way communication. Yep. And, you know, I was talking to an engineer in an airport that said that his daughter has given up Facebook because she's on a, you know, her and her friends just turn on Hangouts and leave them on for like all evening.
My kids do too. They he'll do his homework with, but they do it with Skype, I think, but they'll have the chat running at all times. And Hangouts good because you get nine people, right?
They say you just see a bunch of windows and they're walking and some of them are coming and going and all, you know, they'll be all coming and going in and out. It's like a room that they kind of come into and hang out with either friends and then walk out.
A couple of days ago, I said, what do I want most? And I think maybe after I thought about it, it wasn't the right thing to say, but I said, I want a better camera in the iPad. And I was thinking because of Avid Studio, I thought a great video camera in that thing. But then I thought about it, and a lot of people said, are you kidding? You want a Retina display. You don't want a better camera. Who's going to hold? You see a lot of people taking pictures with iPads.
Yeah.
But I think, Mike, you hit the nail on the head. It's not the – yes, a better back-facing camera, and we're hearing iLounge said 5 to 8 megapixels, probably something comparable to an iPhone 4.
Mm-hmm.
But a better front-facing camera puts the iPad in party mode.
Well, yeah,
it makes it a party mode device. But FaceTime is one-on-one. Do you think they would add then? Isn't it? You can't do conferencing in FaceTime.
Oh, you can pay to have multiple users on Skype, and FaceTime is only one-on-one. And I think they're going to change that. I think Hangouts.
Maybe
is
they'll do that. Maybe that's what a co-announcement is: a better camera and a Hangout-style interface. They do it in iChat. Yeah. Why couldn't? Well, and if you had a quad core chip,
right?
And now here's another question: do they make it work with 4G? Now they don't. It doesn't work with 3G.
I think they will. I think that it's especially if you're going to a higher resolution. I mean, being able to stream that stuff, I think you need to have LTE as part of that pipeline.
It certainly sells LTE.
I'm not sure if they do that. Remember that the bottleneck for LTE is not only the cell towers, but also every single carrier is putting just this sort of caps on LTE that makes it almost impossible to really use effectively. I mean, it really does punish you for not seeking out a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Right. And if you're at home, you're probably on Wi-Fi.
Right.
But Apple has never listened to carriers, have they? I mean, do they really care what Verizon and AT&T say?
They would care about the blowback. I mean, it really is all about the user experience. And
that's true.
I really do think they're the sort of company. They're not the Google sort of company that would sort of allow people to make their own mistakes that way. I think they're the company that would say, if we enable 4G usage of HD FaceTime, then people are going to be blowing past their 2 gigabyte caps. They're going to be very unhappy with it. They're going to be have reduced bandwidth.
Right.
It's much simpler for us to simply say, I'm sorry, this for HD mode, you do require a Wi-Fi hotspot.
What I find interesting is that if I call someone on Facebook and FaceTime, you know, so it'll use the Wi-Fi. But if I just want to call, what I really want to do is call other iPhone users with the Wi-Fi. You know, like just dial it, like have
and
it.
And then
like,
it won't do that, right?
It doesn't. It just uses the regular cell. And my whole thing is, if I'm on a Wi-Fi and they're on a Wi-Fi, I just want to know that if I dial the number, it's just going to automatically reroute the same way that it reroutes my messages, the same way it reroutes my FaceTime. You know, I don't want to turn FaceTime on and then turn it off or whatever. I just want to dial the number, and if it sees, oh, that's another iPhone, I'm just going to connect you directly, makes a big difference when I'm overseas.
I'm going to make a ruling. I'm going to say, you're right, it won't be FaceTime on 3 or 4G. That's my ruling. Moving on. They will have to make it thicker if they put a better camera in or not.
No, they don't.
That's
if
not
they put
an
a better
issue.
Battery in, they might.
Well,
a
battery. It'll be thicker because
about the battery.
Yeah, I think they'll put a heavier battery in there.
Yeah,
right? I do think that also combined with what we saw with iBooks Author, a Retina display makes a lot of sense on an iPad.
Ooh, well, and we're seeing a lot of evidence because we're seeing double and quad resolution icons.
Right.
There are tools in the textbook editor for, you know, I mean, it seems to me that there's a lot of evidence.
The textbook is really compelling at that resolution. Yeah. You know, that's
you almost need it, don't you?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of testing, like where we've been designing iBooks that we're going to be putting out on the iTunes Store in the next couple of weeks, and it's a struggle to fit into the 1024x768 palette. You know, it'd be really nice to have twice that much space.
I still think though, if you had a good HD video camera
on the front, absolutely,
not just on the front, on the back, and
iMovie
maybe, but Avid Studios would I would use it. Admittedly, it's ungainly, but on the other hand, you're getting a great view of what you're seeing. Who needs a video tap? I'm seeing what I'm seeing.
I'm surprised by how many people I see in the field actually using tablets for shooting video, not just the iPad, but I had a double Loch Ness Monster sighting last week in Copley Square. Someone was shooting video with a tablet, and the tablet was a BlackBerry playbook.
Oh, no, that's just weird.
I actually saw someone. It was just the fact that I didn't. Why is this guy holding up their Kindle? Am I seeing someone like testing out the next version of the camera? Like, oh, my God, it's a BlackBerry. Oh, my God.
It's a playbook.
So, yeah, it doesn't make much sense to shoot pictures Matthew Brady style looking at this huge 8x10 sheet of glass. But people do that, and you're exactly right. There's so many really good movie editing apps that if you really are in the mode of you're using your iPad as a primary device and not just a portable content thing, that is a really cool thing. And they can hardly do worse than the camera they have right now. I think it would almost cost them less money to put a better front-facing, a better upgrade both the cameras on that device.
By the way, BlackBerry has not given up yet. Byron's telling me in the chat room that they gave away playbooks on Ellen yesterday. Everybody in the audience got a playbook on Ellen. How does she justify this? Hey, here's the tablet nobody wants, but you got one.
It's big enough for two Twinkies and a beverage.
We have a serving tray. I bought a playbook. I did buy a playbook when it came out, and it's around here somewhere.
I have to admit,
Burke's been using it quite a bit now. Yeah,
Burke gets all my old stuff. He also has the 10-inch Dell Windows machine that I bought some time ago. I buy stuff that's really bad, and then I give it to Burke, and he loves it.
Well, he's been using it to test audio. He says it's been, satisfactory.
There's actually some great things in the playbook, and Rim has said they're going to put email out on the next edition, and a lot of the mistakes they made on the playbook they're going to fix. So you know what? Playbook may not be dead yet.
Just like the storm.
The what? A storm?
I got sent that. That was a
horrible thought.
I had to do a thing with the storm, and it was the most horrible piece of.
Well, that was the one because they're trying to make it clickable, but it had a physical.
You push it.
Yeah, it was like, really?
You tweet Ellen answers. Ellen took to Twitter again to answer her followers' urgent questions. This time, she had a huge surprise for everyone. A BlackBerry playbook! How much do you think BlackBerry paid?
Yeah, exactly. It's not like, we'll send you something to give away. It's like, we're going to pay you $1 million.
Taped underneath a $50 bill, so you'll cheer!
No, what they did is they handed out a playbook, and when they walked off stage, here, have an iPad.
I really wonder what the audience thought. Like, playbook. Okay. Mm. Okay. Huh.
Well, it's an expensive piece of hardware, and I don't think
nobody's going to turn it down.
The type of people who would go and to an Ellen audience and sit in the audience, these aren't the Andy and Notkos of the world. These are, you know what I mean? They're not going to be very savvy about what the best tablet is.
I got to watch this. I'm sorry. I like Ellen. I love Ellen.
Yeah.
She's just great.
How are you?
Good.
Good. I like this segment because the people...
Notice that she called it Twit. I'm going to have to sue. All right. That's enough of that. Alan, if you pull this video, our video down for infringement of your rights, I'm pulling your video down for infringement of our rights. How about that? Does Google have a DMCA takedown for infringement of the Twit trademark?
They want to answer, and here's some fuzz. And and then I answer them in the twits and ask. And what happened? Where's your computer?
I'm using my new BlackBerry Playbook. It's a tablet that lets you run multiple apps the same time. Multiple apps. You can do a lot of stuff on it.
Really?
Yes.
It's so tiny, little like your shorts.
Don't they have to say when it's an ad like that? Like say, this is an ad? BlackBerry played promotional.
They don't have to say that.
That's a very brilliant.
That's in Britain.
Maybe at the end.
They have to do that
in Britain.
Yeah.
But you see how Ellen is the surrogate for the audience, and it acts like she never even heard of it.
Right. It's shorter. It's smaller because maybe than your shorts.
She might be literally sitting up there going, what is this?
Yeah, it's not an iPad. Isn't it an iPad? Why don't we have iPads?
Someone probably told her right before she walked on stage.
All right. And can we still do the same thing? Yes. I can answer the questions, the people? Yep. Okay. Well, yep. What do the people want to know?
First question, Corey's Reviews, how's your back doing?
Oh, Corey's Reviews. Thank you for asking. My back was very bad last week.
I'm going to skip ahead to where she gets, because I really don't care about her back. But I do want to skip ahead to where
I bought two? Mm-hmm. I bought 402.
And they go crazy. Yes. Now, I want to hear the promotional consideration.
Brought to you by Best Buy and BlackBerry.
Wow.
We found these in the trash.
Wow. Wow.
Award-winning giant domino tumble.
You get a playbook. Yes, it's the BlackBerry playbook brought to you by RIM, a smaller device than the iPad 2 that gives you all the features except email.
It doesn't really work, but it's free.
Well, disappoint your niece or nephew or your grandchildren.
The audience will have heard of BlackBerry.
They will have heard of BlackBerry.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's a good brand.
And notice,
BlackBerry is a great brand.
Notice the elevator pitch, because the guy gave the advertising line when he says it runs several applications at once.
Whew.
So it's unlike the Commodore 64. You're talking about
not like DOS. It will run more than one application at the same
Apple
time.
Too, it's stuck.
Not only that, it will run every application made for the playbook at the same time.
There's enough memory to run every application ever written. All right, I'm sorry. We shouldn't mock the poor playbook.
Well, but you do raise an okay point there. It's I'm not sure that that there aren't consumers out there who don't really care about iPad, BlackBerry, Amazon Kindle. They care about the features more than anything else. And so that if you have a $200 tablet like the Kindle, the fact that it's not the gee whiz bang tablet that the iPad is doesn't really matter to them. They can still watch movies on it. They can still read books on it. They can still surf the web on it, and that's perfectly okay for them. So
I gotta
have an iPad 3 with Retina display and octa-core processor and hoverboard functionality. But sometimes these consumers, they just want to read books, they just want to watch movies, and they want to get out of there for less than $200.
But I gotta think that if Ellen said, "And you've all just won an iPad 2," the screams would have been just a smidge better.
Yeah,
a
we recognize that logo on the back. Yes.
Yeah, I think there might have been just a little more excitement. So do you agree that it will be a quad-core A6?
I don't know about the CPU. I think that Apple's going to focus on the performance rather on the being able to say, oh, well, this is a quad-core processor. As always, on a device like this, it's all about power consumption. And if you've got X amount of square inches to put into processing power, do you really want to put all that power into multiple processors, or do you want to just do it by improving the architecture of the current CPU and adding some really good GPU to the side of it to get the performance that you really, really want? If it really is a Retina display and one of the points of this device really is to get 1080 HD, man, they're not going to really care about how fast it'll recalculate a spreadsheet. They're going to care about having not one drop frame when they're playing HD video on this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be fast. I think that's what we can... It's going to be faster than
that. And you're right. I think that while we care about quad core, we know what an A6 system on a chip is. Nobody sells stuff that way anymore. Or
people should. They're just going to say, does it react when I touch it?
Right.
You know.
And if you have that many more pixels, you kind of need more processing, right? Yeah, I mean, that's not going to be
four times as much.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily let's have a general use sevenfold increase in overall processing. Right. It could be just that we really want to use that power and that square footage inside the case just specifically to increase our pipe for HD playback.
By the way, the rumors disagree on this A6. 9to5 Mac says they found code references to quad core, but The Verge says we hear otherwise. So this will be good. We'll see who's right. You think March 7th? That's credible. If it's March 7th, what is the ship date? March 14th?
It's going to be summer, probably.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, I think
so. They didn't do that last year. Last year, they announced it, what, in February, and it came out. I remember it came out when we were at South by Southwest. They did the pop-up store in Austin.
Yeah, but then again, they didn't need if this is LTE, they're going to need a new radio. So that's a brand new
FCC
process.
Okay. Okay. So there you go. June 20th.
June 29th. That's what I'm going to guess.
I'm going to be bummed if it's not available pretty quick.
It could be March 9th. March 9th is the Friday. They could just go crazy.
I don't think they would do that. I think that the soonest we would see it is about 2.5 weeks after that event, because I just think from a logistical point of view, they're going to invite a couple of hundred members of the press for the unveiling, and then 10 of those will be ushered into a hotel suite nearby, sign a pile of documents, and walk out of there with a backpack with a Microsoft logo on it that they're not allowed to talk about.
That's why so I'm having a Walt Mossberg costume and mask manufactured.
Are you doing like Mission Impossible style, or just peels
right off? Exactly. And then at the end, I'll rip off the mask. That actually makes a lot of sense, Andy. And the original iPad shipped on April 3rd, if I recall.
That's right. And it was announced in January.
But so first week of April, announce it end of the first week of March, and then ship 3 weeks later. That's conceivable.
Yeah, I mean, I got mine 2.5 weeks before, That was it wasn't cloak and dagger, but they decided that a couple of weeks, 2 weeks before the actual release was ample time to get an advanced thing in it. So, I'd be surprised if they would try to send marketing teams and executives all across the country for like two different or three different. Briefings to cover the people they would have to see before at least the iPad 3. So, I would be surprised if they released it on March 7th or very shortly after it. I wouldn't be surprised if, as you say, the actual release date was going to be a couple months later. But I really think that we'll be talking about release sometime at the end of March, early April.
I'm convinced.
Wall Street Journal says.
I should say, but I was going to say earlier, I'm sorry, credit where credit's due. Jim Dalrymple at the Loop is backing the March 7th date. And Jim is one of those names where if he unequivocally backs a rumor that, okay, I got to work under the assumption that this is absolutely true.
He's backing the Renee rumor. So he's saying, yes, Renee. And so you're vouching for him and he's vouching for Renee. So there.
But it's too. Multiple pieces of a puzzle. He's not like just simply saying, "Ooh, I read this. This looks cool." I would have to guess, based on his reputation, that he also knows some stuff, and this syncs up with the stuff that he's heard. Unfortunately, he has much better inside knowledge than I do about things that are related to scheduling and unannounced products like that. So I've never been burned by Jim in the past. So he's a really good source. So
we'll add journal.
Excuse me. Really good opinion
about not source.
Another source. Exactly. Yeah.
So we'll add the journal to they're in the column first week of March. They're also in the column. There will be LTE. They say they don't know, and other carriers aren't talking about AT&T and Sprint, but they say 4G on Verizon. And, you know, part of that is because I think Verizon announced, or at CES, a Verizon vice president said, we're not going to take any more non-LTE devices. So that would be an indicator. Brooke Crothers writing in the Circuits blog at CNET says, quad-core, not so fast. TI, which is an ARM processor supplier, says they're not going quad-core. So I don't know. I mean, Apple makes its own, you know, they use ARM, but they make their own chips. So what TI does is probably not germane. Qualcomm.
I think obviously all they're going to worry about is making sure that it's a lot faster or feels more responsive.
I think you're right.
You know, or even as responsive on a Retina display, I think will be probably satisfactory.
Gus Richard, who's an analyst for Piper Jaffray, says they're going to beef up the graphics.
Yeah.
Which won't leave room for another two CPUs. Graphics, GPU upgrade maybe a better improvement.
Well, you have to get that much. I mean, that's
Anand of Anandtech says it seems very unlikely if people are thinking quad core. Having four A9s, that's a Tegra 3, is not the right move. He says single threaded performance still has a lot of room to improve. Improving that doesn't mean going with more of the same cores. This is kind of very similar, actually, to the state of the art in processors for desktops. Mm-hmm. Where Intel didn't go quad core until they had maxed out the clock speeds on the single cores.
Right,
that's right, Mike, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean the whole thing. I have no solid opinion on this, but the whole thing smacks of it's the kind of thing that the Google, the Android hardware makers would do.
Android would do it before Apple would do it.
Yeah, I think they're going to be. I think they'll find a way that, as has always been the case with iPads, of having incredible performance and also having great battery life,
right.
Without just throwing massive quantities of raw hardware at it. I don't know. I just doesn't seem like the kind of leap they'd make.
And here's another link from the Wall Street Journal: Apple and suppliers test tablet with. Smaller screen. We're talking 8-inch screens.
I have to say, I would be more tempted to get an 8-inch screen than the iPad 3. You know, because I just find that the iPad is just a little too large to put in my
Is the 8-inch screen enough of a change to really make a material difference?
Well, here's why I think they'll do it. If you look at the profit in the smartphone market and the tablet market, the profit, that's the business, that's why companies exist, to make profit ultimately. All of the profit is between the iPhone and the iPad, outside the iOS universe. So, for example, the Amazon Kindle Fire is succeeding. Presumably, they're going to make a lot of money on it, not from the hardware, but from their whole proposition.
It's 7 inches.
Right, it's 7 inches. The, you know, Samsung is the only other profitable company really worth noting. I mean, 95% of the profits in the cell phone market came from just two companies, and 80% of that was Apple. 15% of the profits were from Samsung, and Samsung is really going to move everybody to that that Galaxy Note of yours.
I love it. I was sold. I thought this is too big, and after using it for 2 weeks, I am completely sold on it.
So I think that from 6 months, a year from now, all of the profits outside the iOS universe are going to be in devices that are in between those two. And so really, Apple...
Do you think phones will all be 4 and 5 inches and then there'll be 7-inch tablets?
I think 95% of the phones will be roughly the size of the iPhone, but I think I think Samsung will actually grow their ability to be profitable, and I think at least half of those are, and I'm making these numbers up, but I think a lot of those are going to be Galaxy Notes. That's a compelling form factor. It's a compelling, it's a rare, clear differentiator from the iPhone at this point. And I think people are going to be gobbling them up, and I think they're going to be profitable for Samsung. And so, you know, there's a sweet spot in there somewhere, you know, between tablets and between the iPhone and the iPad. And there's a third reason. Now, Andy was talking about how you need the big resolution screen for ebooks. But when they announced did the whole education market thing, I did a live hangout during the thing with educators. I had people who were responsible for huge rollouts in school districts all over the country, who are teachers who have iPads. There's kids have iPads. And they brought up something that none of the tech people are talking about. All of the educators agreed that there are two problems with the iPad as an education device. Number one, yeah, the rich school districts in Oregon do great with that, but there aren't very many of those school districts who are willing to spend $500 per pupil just for the hardware before they start buying textbooks. The second thing, which I have never heard anybody else said, and which all of these educators were very adamant about, is you can't send a little kid out the front door of the schoolhouse with a $500 piece of consumer electronics that everybody wants to steal. And so I think that the sweet spot for the K-12 education market is going to be a cheaper device, $200 device from Apple. I think their education system isn't going to work unless they can do this broad-based rollout of hardware. And I think the only way to really have a less expensive device is to have a smaller device. So I really think that an 8-inch, 7-inch, 7-point-something-inch device is going to be necessary for Apple to really go mainstream with education.
Well, I don't think I agree with that for two different very separate reasons. First of all, to address the educational element to that, that is a very fine point. But the most expensive component in a tablet like that is the display. So if Apple simply said we're going to keep the sub retina scale display and make that our price busting price point, that's going to be our $299 iPad. We will keep a 10-inch pad that uses a cheaper display. That might solve that problem a little bit. But I won't say that I know for a fact that Apple will not make a smaller version of the iPad. I'm sure that they're playing with that, partly because these higher resolution displays make a smaller screen a little bit more practical. At least it'll still be more readable. But the thing is that Apple, I think, only does things because they see a real need for it, or a real market for it. Right now, the consumers out there are not telling Apple, we demand a smaller iPad. They're still selling iPads hand over foot as fast as they can possibly make them. So there doesn't seem to be like they're leaving money off on the table right now by having just a 10-inch display. Then now we have an example of, well, how about a successful 7-inch tablet in the form of the $199 Kindle Fire? Now Apple has had some time to look at the numbers coming in from at least the holiday quarter last year about how Kindle Fire sales affected the sales of the iPad. And Tim Cook already said that we have looked at those numbers and we don't see any examples of the Kindle Fire cannibalizing iPad sales. So that's another. So they don't. I don't feel as though right now they're feeling any pressure from the makers of smaller form factor tablets right now. I think that they are convinced that the people who are buying the 7-inch tablets are people that they weren't going to sell 10-inch tablets to anyway. That they're just they can't create a compelling product for the consumers of the Kindle Fire and those kind of tablets. So they're going to continue to look at this. I think they're continuing to build iPads of various size and actually put them out in the field with executives to see how well it works in the field. I don't see, though, that Apple currently has any pressure to actually produce that kind of a tablet. And we won't really see any new pressure until maybe the end of this year, beginning of next year.
Your point really is that Apple tests stuff all the time. It's meaningless to say Apple's testing a smaller tablet.
Not only that, exactly. They test stuff all the time, but also that I need to see a reason why either Apple's leaving money on the table or they're getting too much competition from other people to get that. Those are the two reasons, or one of those two reasons, would compel them to make a 7-inch or an 8-inch iPad. Right now, I don't see that they're feeling any pressure from either of those things. They're not going to do it just because, hey, geez, this guy, Samsung, is selling a bunch of 7-inch tablets. Amazon is selling a bunch of 7-inch tablets. We don't want to be the only losers out there who don't have a 7-inch tablet.
But I think that the only thing I'll say is that there's a lot of oxygen between $200 and $500. And there's it seems compelling to me for Apple.
That's why I think a $299 lower resolution tablet is going to be Apple's solution. I think their solution to that, if I'm going to guess, is going to be let's keep the iPad 2 as an existing SKU and lower the price of that down to I was going to say $199 because that number's on my mind.
Because that would be awesome.
I think that would be how, if you want to see the best way for them to spend all their billions of dollars, have a loss leader iPad just to kill not just every other competing tablet, but kill the hopes and dreams and futures of every executive at every other company.
That's what we call antitrust.
Or even $349, I think that would be good enough.
And I think it's also a way to respond to schools, and you know, you've got this textbook thing. Yeah. You need a low cost one so that schools can buy in. And I tell you what, it's worth selling it at a loss.
I mean,
to get millions of kids in middle schools and high schools hooked on the iPad.
Well, and the thing is that I think that
that's worth it.
And you have to realize that Apple's business is. I mean, Andy, your analysis is spot on. But right now, Apple's only talking about hardware. Content is the business in the long term, and they want to get. You know, I just don't see Apple seeding that market to Amazon. Just say, okay, you know, you're competing with iTunes, you're competing with the movies, you're offering TV shows, you have a better app store than the Android marketplace, and go for it. You know, it's all yours. I don't see Apple just letting Amazon just come into its space and making a gazillion dollars on content. If in fact they are able to do that, that's yet.
I don't think they see it as competition. Really, I think that their sales pitch when they're in the meeting with the bulk buyer in education, they're going to say that yes, it's a fine tablet, but it's a tiny screen. You really can't even get many fingers into it. There's a limit to the sort of content you can produce to it. A 10-inch screen gives you opportunities for so much more interactivity. And also, the sales pitch goes: we have this tool called iBooks Author that makes it very, very easy for not only educators but also for textbook publishers to create the sort of content that will truly exploit this sort of platform. Mm-hmm. All Amazon can give you is that, well, they can have this sort of HTML5 this EPUB2 enhancement of proprietary format that can create a single scrolling column of text interspersed with photos and clickable videos. So I think they have ways to combat that. But in the end, the answer to those questions is always, well, who knows? Apple can do pretty much anything they want to do.
I do think finding a way to $200, you know, the OLPC is about $200, right? I mean, that's about the cost of that's the running cost of those. And so getting
a laptop child, yeah.
Finding a way to $200 for some kind of tablet would be revolutionary on Apple's part. I will say that if they were able to do it, you're not just talking about schools in the...
Whoa.
You're not just talking about schools in the U.S., but schools, you know.
I think you're having a nuclear meltdown, Mike. I hope you're prepared. I would say scramble the rods now.
Yeah, it's a nuclear attack, and everybody's running. But I'm staying with you.
Stay with us, will you? Thank you. Good. And where are you living now, so we can all leave that area?
Los Gatos.
DEFCON 6.
Did you know that? A little bit of trivia about nuclear attacks in Silicon Valley. Did you know that Kim Jong-il once threatened to turn Palo Alto, California into a sea of fire?
A slag heap. Mm. And did he succeed? No.
No, American negotiator, this was back in the 90s, I think, was from Palo Alto, California.
Wow.
And at some point in the negotiations, he actually pointed his finger at her and said, I will turn Palo Alto into a sea of fire.
Oh, my God. It must be hard not to laugh when a 4'8" person...
Yeah.
With no discernible nuclear capability.
Yes.
Says something like that. Yeah. Oh, yes, your lovable dictatorship. Thank you. Wow.
Rat hole.
Rat hole, and we're going to stop now because we have much more to talk about, including the deplorable state of technology journalism in the U.S. But before we do that...
I've already apologized about that.
It's your fault. No, and actually, some really interesting rumors about the Apple TV. I think this March 7th, if it is March 7th.
Could be fun.
Could be more than just iPads.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And let's talk about the one more thing in just a little bit. Can Tim Cook do a one more thing?
I don't know.
Scott Forstall.
He's got to give that up. He's got to do
You know who could
else.
Do one more thing really credibly? Johnny Ive.
Yeah.
Oh, and one more thing.
Yes.
It'd be one more thing, but it would be very exciting. I don't know if he talks like that. I don't think he does.
Yeah. Ow. Apple marketing director Jason Stratham.
Ow. And one more thing.
You got like a Michael Caine thing.
Yeah, right. Hey, here's another thing. And another thing.
You don't need to be beaten over the head with education. Well, you're going to anyway, aren't you?
Sorry. I should
you were listening to that Michael Caine book somewhere, I could tell. Oh, my God. Let's take a break and come back with more Andy Iannacos here. Mike Elgin from the Google Plus. Mike, the one thing, and this is the negative about being Mr. Google Plus, is you can't really say from Google Plus.
Yeah, it's a platform ease of communication
right.
issue.
It'd be like saying from WordPress or, you know, I mean, it doesn't,
right.
from Squarespace.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do we say?
Well, you know, I have a company called Elgin Media. We
there
can say
go.
That.
Mike Elgin of Elgin Media, elgin.com, and then it just goes right to Google Plus.
Yeah, and associate, who is my wife. No, it's elgin.com works. That just right. redirects to Google Plus, right. but that's a, you know, sounds better than, it sounds less like I work for Google.
Right.
So.
Right.
Which I've been accused of lately because I've been so pro Google Plus.
You know, we did last night. Trey Ratcliffe, the great photographer, Trey Ratcliffe, does yep. a Google Plus hangout every Monday night, which we rebroadcast Trey's Variety Hour, and I joined them last night. And that is a great format for podcasting for what
Isn't
we
it?
Do.
Yeah.
It really works.
Well, I've actually started. Doing something called the Flying Circle, and it's not about tech. I find communities. It's about community. So I did a ukulele circle. I did a skateboarder
like
circle. I did the education one that I mentioned. And suddenly I had an epiphany last week. Why don't I just spin out the audio and the video and make it a podcast? And so that's what I'm starting to do. And now, and I listened to I did it. I grabbed an MP3, listened to it, and it's a credible format for MP3. And this is an example of kind of what I do with my newsletter, which is automatically posted. I don't touch
right.
anything.
You don't have to do anything, yeah.
Right, and also my Twitter feed, that's all generated from my Google Plus. So there's something in there for low budget people who, you know, people who want to do a low budget podcast. You can do it for free.
Yeah.
Are you using the Hangouts on Air?
Yeah, I have Hangouts on Air, and it's pretty bulletproof and awesome. I like it.
I mean, we could absolutely, you know. Now that I've built this studio, we could have absolutely used that and eliminated all of this stuff. But
now, the problem is that the quality of the vision of the cameras is generally very low.
Right.
The conversation tends to be kind of stop and go and awkward because it just the
well,
way
that, that's
just,
one of the things I realized. You need a good moderator. You still need the talent
yes.
on camera. You need people who can talk. You need a moderator. So that hasn't changed. But just the production is much easier than it used to be.
But what happens is, what typically happens is somebody's making some profound point, and then somebody coughs, and the camera switches to the cougher for like 3 seconds. And, you know, weird stuff like that.
But so you can, as moderator, mute everybody. So you can control that, right? You could say, everybody's muted except the person is talking, and then I will select the next person and unmute them. So there's ways to do it.
You can do that in a Hangout, but in Hangouts on Air, you don't have what you see during the Hangout with Hangouts on Air is not what's recorded. So the order that people are at the bottom, all that stuff, and you always go to the Hangout on Air, and they're like, "Wow, I didn't realize that that's what was going on." So it's really, you know, it's great for quick and dirty,
right?
Super low, you know, low budget. I tried to explain this. I did a couple of weeks ago. I did the Bones Brigade, which is a famous skateboarding group, and they've been doing a gazillion media interviews and stuff. And I told these guys, you know, the low budget, scrappy, you know, that's the charm of it. It's like, you know, immediate and low budget, and I've never seen anybody except President Obama do anything high quality production-y. And they spent a fortune on the equipment to do the Obama Hangout.
So, oh God, yeah, you saw the behind the scenes stuff. It was
So it's not Twit and by any stretch of the imagination.
The Obama one?
They posted some pictures and stuff. Yeah,
okay. That was a beautiful.
When we record it, when we do trays, we record it. So we're not using Hangouts on Air for the version we put out.
Right.
But the version that Trey then posts on YouTube, I'm pretty sure is Hangouts on Air
because it automatically.
So you'd actually we're getting a different version.
Right. Yeah.
And we have Tony, who runs the board. Tony Wang does the switching of people. Mm-hmm. So he manually picks people up, I think.
Well, you can click on their little windows.
Yeah, I think he's doing that.
So on air, Mike, when you click on it to hold someone, doesn't that hold it on the on air as well?
That I don't know. Okay. There are other restrictions as well. For example, on a regular Hangout, you can show video. You can say, "Hey, buddy, look at this video." And I'd love to be able to do that with Hangouts on Air, but you can't do it. You can do screen sharing on a Hangout on Air, but you can't do, you know, here's a video.
Right.
And I frankly doubt that will ever exist for, you know, just, I don't think Google trusts people with copyright because people are going to say, "Well, here, you know, let's watch this.
Let's watch the Super Bowl together."
Scene from, yeah, exactly. So,
well, you have to be selected for Hangouts on Air. It's not open to the public yet.
That's correct. And right. I think the consensus is that soon they'll open it up to everybody.
But I do see they have moderation controls. They have sticky click,
right?
Yep.
Remote mute, block, and invite. And Trey was using, I think, invite for sure. The YouTube button chat. Well, that's good. I doubt they've given us. Google doesn't seem to like us for some reason. I doubt they've given us access to that, but I'll ask. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Mike Elgin is here from Elgin Media at Elgin.com.
That's right.
When you need rods scrambled, Mike's the man to do it. Mr. Alex Lindsay is here from the Pixel Corps. Got to give you a big plug this week because you won't be back next week. PixelCorps.com for that guild of multimedia artists learning and working together. PixelCorps.tv for the great podcasts.
We're on Pixel Corps is also on Google+.
Of course you are. Why
we're starting
you
to post
be?
more of that. So.
And can we follow? Do you still do your blog or anything? Is there any way to follow
PixelCorps?
What you're doing personally?
The best way to follow what I'm doing personally is probably Google Plus and Twitter.
Okay,
those are the Google Plus is where I'm going to put. I put more long form stuff. Like today, I posted a thing on education, and then Twitter is where I just kind of post crazy stuff.
You're like me. We change all the time.
I use them all.
You have to use a different
stuff. I was trying to explain to somebody at the airport. I use LinkedIn for this and Facebook for that and Twitter for this and Google Plus for that and Path for this.
Right.
And I don't actually want to give up any. Like I used to think I wanted them to merge or something. Like I kind of they're all different little worlds for me.
And Alex Lindsay is at pixelcore.com. I said that. Oh, it's Andy Anako. That's the guy over here. He is at the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth and the Chicago Sun-Times. At Inotco. Is that the best place to figure out what you're doing?
Usually, Inotco.com is the first place if you want the big picture stuff.
Oh, so we should get rid of CWOB.com and have it be Inotco.com.
Well, I pick CWOB.com because people can probably spell CWOB. That's the alternative because I didn't even buy Inotco.com for years before I realized that who else is going to. How many other Inotcos are there?
That's right.
But yeah, no, it is a problem. I'll end this in 10 seconds. I'm sorry. This commercial has been like, Link has been like circling the runway for about 20 minutes now.
No, that's burning off. You know what? Yeah, I do something a little different now on the shows. I do plugs earlier on because what we were saving, like the Howard Stern show, you know, Howard Stern, like at 10 o'clock in the morning, finally everybody starts plugging for an hour.
Right.
Yeah. And I realize nobody's hearing those plugs. So I put the plugs in the middle now.
All I was going to say was that I recently realized that I'm not blogging enough, and that's only because of a lack of effort. That every day I have lots of thoughts that are interesting to me. I read lots of things I want to pass on, but I never actually train myself to click that button in my button bar at the browser and actually blog it, because I do so much stuff on Twitter. So I'm trying to see how far I can go. How long of this? I actually have a little printed calendar on my refrigerator with a pen on it, that every day I try to blog something, even if it's just like one link and like one paragraph explaining that link, and to see how long a streak I can go, because it's a lack of effort. I'm sorry. I have failed you, the people. those amusing cat videos that I've laughed at, but then failed to pass on. Well, I am abrogating my responsibilities no further, or at least every time that I go for a freezer pop, I'll be reminded that, oh, wait, you're supposed to blog something today, weren't you?
That's why I do more blogging now, audio blog with the audio boo, because I can't, writing slows me down, so I could do that.
I do the opposite. I'm such a compulsive blogger that I have to post on my blog to remind me to eat.
That's a good idea. I should do that, not to eat. Let's talk a little bit about GoToMeeting, then we'll come back. We do have those. I'm very interested on what Apple TV might be up to, and I have a feeling this panel might have some suggestions. But first, here is a great way to meet with people and see them as you're meeting them. We've talked about GoToMeeting before as screen sharing, and it's still a great screen sharing solution, really the kind of the ideal way to have meetings, because that screen sharing makes it more engaging. You show a keynote or a PowerPoint, Mac or PC, cross-platform completely. People can meet with you on any platform. You're on any platform. But what they've added, this new HD Faces, is mind-boggling. It really does make it – this is the trend, isn't it? Is we want to see people. We want to see their reactions. We want to see their faces. And GoToMeeting is just remarkable. This HD Faces allows you to be doing the screen sharing and see the faces above it. If you go to GoToMeeting.com right now, and there's a button right there, HD Video Conferencing, watch the video. It is that good. I mean, it really looks that good. But, you know, there's another way to find out. It's try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Underneath this video here, there's an orange try it free button. I want you to see when this is how it looks. So you got your screen sharing. Oh, you've got it different than I do. There. Yeah, you've got your screen sharing, but then you have the heads of the people. It's just like this. And you can drag them around and stuff. Most people now have very good webcams. They can really do this. And it just transforms how your meetings are. If you do team meetings, performance reviews, sales meetings, training, click the try it free button, visit GoToMeeting.com, use the offer code MacBreak. You got it free for 30 days. You use this.
We do use GoToMeeting a lot. We use GoToMeeting and GoToSeminar. And one of the big things that comes with a lot of this is also a lot of the management tools. So people always ask me, why do you use, if you have GoToSeminar or GoToMeeting, why are you using Hangouts? Well, Hangouts is a lot more, you know, it's kind of wide open, and it's easy to kind of do through the web. But when we use GoToMeeting, it's much more managed. So from a business perspective,
quality wise, it's better. Right. I mean, just all around.
Right. I mean, it's built for something different. And they both fulfill something.
If you're doing a sales presentation, you're not going to say, "Hey, come meet me in Google Hangouts." I don't think. Maybe you are. I don't know. It seems like you would probably want something a little more professional.
Well, and as I said, it's the ability to manage it, especially when you start to scale, is just they've got lots of great tools that are built in. It's fantastic.
So you've seen the rumors going around that you can't buy an Apple TV anymore. Like they're out of stock and they're not. The guy at Best Buy says we can't get any more. That usually is an indicator that there's a new Apple TV coming. I'm thinking March 7th, they're not only going to announce an iPad. Will they announce a new Apple TV?
I think they will. 1080p. And you'll be able to use the USB for a USB camera for FaceTime.
Okay, wait a minute. I got to adjust this in my head.
Those are the two things I think will happen.
There'll be a camera?
No, there won't be a camera in the USB. There's a USB connector in the current Apple
Always
TV.
Always has been.
And if you were able to plug a camera into that, then you could use it for FaceTime. You know, with your TV.
It makes sense that they'd go 1080p, because even the Roku has got 1080p now, right?
Yes.
A camera, though, you're cracked. But that confirms your FaceTime thing, right? Apple's going to start to really push FaceTime everywhere, even on your television.
I still think that's the living room experience for the camera for FaceTime is a big deal. I mean, I just as a father of little kids with their grandparents, having FaceTime in the living room experience would be a big deal for their grandparents.
The way I look at Apple TV and the future television that everybody's been talking about forever is that it's really all about iCloud and all the things you can do with iCloud and connecting all your devices. I'm convinced that the television of the future, not this thing that we're talking about now, but eventually when they actually make the hardware, that this thing will be remote controllable by every iOS device, in the house, the phone, the tablet, anything you want to use, and also come with a little remote. I think that'll have a microphone, so you talk to Siri, all that stuff. Now, working back to this announcement, I think that we can almost be certain that there's going to be better iCloud stuff going on, better connectivity between your devices. And if you look at a high definition,
but that can be done in software, right?
Yeah, but I mean, but if you look at a high-definition iPad, they want to maximize the experience of watching something on an iPad and say, you know what, let's look at this on the TV, and just boom, there it is. And they want it to be really high quality. I watched the Grammys. They didn't do the Grammys, but they did the interviews behind the scenes, mm-hmm. and all that stuff during the Grammys. And we watched it using the iPad app, the Grammys app, projected on our 41-inch...
Used AirPlay.
And it was... It was already pretty darn good. And I think this is how Apple starts to make an end run around the cable companies and all of the powers that are preventing us from really enjoying TV as much as we could. And so I think that, if you start from the point of view that, this announcement is likely to have a better audio video experience on the iPad, better connectivity through iCloud to the television, then you can start to piece together what they're likely to do. But I think there's no question that they're going to, make it easier to continue to do what you've been able to do, which is with AirPlay and all that stuff, to just move things around on different devices and watch things from one device on another device.
And one thing that we've seen third parties do that we haven't seen Apple really dig into is collapsing the modal connection. Right now, we're basically, we use our iPad or we watch TV, but a lot of us are doing both at the same time, but we're not, what we haven't done is start really interconnecting that content so that you can be watching a program and having something that is running with that program, on your iPad. It's a completely full frame experience on your iPad that's giving you more information or other information or chats or all these other things. And I think that is where one of the things that I think Apple could be eventually, moving towards as they start to integrate a lot of the devices, not just controlling those devices, but interacting with the content in multiple ways at the same time.
Andy, what do you think?
I think that this is finally going to be the Apple TV's year. It's been around for years and years and years. I think Apple knew that they would need at some point in their lives to have a conduit to an actual HD TV screen, a conduit into the living room. I just think that for years they've been sort of trying to figure out via the Braille method, trying to figure out what that sort of conduit is going to be like. So they really have to feel the way around. They have to sort of build it, then look at it, say, nope, that's not it. Take it apart, build another one. Nope, that's not it. I think they finally have it. I think they really I wouldn't be surprised at all if the next iteration of the Apple TV actually had the iCloud logo molded into the rubber somewhere.
That's Andy's prediction. Well, iCloud in the rubber.
Exactly.
It's the little things in life.
Well, I think that they have the opportunity to finally clarify what this device is. That they tried it as a destination device where, hey, I'm going to go sit down in front of my Apple TV and watch some video that's going to create for me. That failed. I think they really are to the point of they really are going to clarify it to where this is going to be a way to shuttle everything you've got in iCloud and all of your different iOS and macOS devices and project that experience onto your screen. I think that part of that is just going to be a matter of clarifying the existing menu structure, where right now there's just this long bank of drop-down menus, and to get to what is for most people the most interesting and the most useful feature, Netflix, that you have to go left, down, and then select it, even to get to the home sharing features of iTunes, which is probably the best feature of the thing. Again, click, left, down, and then click on what you actually want. I think we're going to see a streamlined interface that simply intuitively understands that you've got X devices with all this sort of media on it. What is the easiest way to get that device that media from where you're viewing it previously to viewing it on the screen? I really think it is that moment where you stop watching a YouTube video or listen to a podcast off your iPad. You suddenly decide, oh, this is nuts. I'm here in the living room. I should be listening to it on the really cool screen. Tap, click, and suddenly you're watching it on the Apple TV. That's the clarity that the Apple TV has been missing for 3 or 4 years.
How about apps?
Apps, I'm not sure if apps would even be exposed to the regular developer community. I think that Apple would be really eager to get HBO Go and the Cinemax app available for iOS
and a Twit app
for the Apple TV. Yeah, to have like a special sort of ultra curated channel selection. They certainly don't want the Playboy channel to be able to stream for multiple articulations of the word stream content onto their through their nice little Apple logo device.
No, then Roku's going to outsell them because that's you can on Roku. And I
Angry Birds
is on Roku,
saying,
right?
No, I'm saying Angry Birds on the Apple TV would be awesome.
I think Angry Birds has to beat Roku.
Is the Doom 3 of the 21st century.
You're right.
Everybody who doesn't want to get their work done, say, oh, let's find a way to port Angry Birds onto this device. I'm sick and tired of it.
Yeah, I think what's inevitable is the integration of iMessage into the television experience because people like to social and watching television, and I think iMessage exists, and I think it's a great...
So then your wife can see your messages to your girlfriends right there on the big screen. That'll be good.
Exactly.
That'll be good.
To sell flowers, I'm sorry.
Will they do live TV? Because that is the one thing cord cutters lose, right?
Well, and I think that if you combine what Mike just said, if you're having the commenting and the social part mixed with the live event streaming, you get
now
into
you've invented
that's
the
very,
Google TV.
Very compelling. Yeah,
that's Google TV.
Well, I think that there's live TV is one problem, one option, but simultaneous TV is another. So people can say, let's all watch. You know, again, Apple's trying to get at the social networking desire in multiple peripheral ways. And one of them is to say, let's all watch this movie together on opposite sides of the country
right.
and then chat about it while we do it. So simultaneous TV is something that can be provisioned from iCloud.
No, actually, and you do have apps. If you have good AirPlay, you do have apps on your iPad. That's another way to get into that. I mean, people are doing that. Yeah. You know, one of the things Google TV does well, and there are not many, but one of the things they do well is it's an overlay on top of your live TV so that, you know, it's a pass-through box. So you have your cable box going to the Google TV, going to the television set. So in a way, you do get the mixture of the two, and you get that kind of capability to tweet while you're watching.
I think that's the only solution that Apple has available to them to get live TV on the box, because if they're going to have to cut deals with every single channel and every single provider, terms that they're going to that these providers are actually going to agree with, they're going to water down this concept so it's absolutely useless. Whereas if they try to go for a sling box sort of effect, where plug HDMI out from your cable box into the Apple TV, we will overlay our stuff on it, and we won't rebroadcast what you've got over the internet, but at least we can get access to the 9 channels that you actually want.
Yeah.
I mean, if Apple would get $99 for me, if all they were capable of doing is make it appear as though I'm only getting the 11 channels that I actually am interested in, and I never have to see, you know, Hillbilly Hand Fishing Volume 8.
I really like that show. I just want to let you know.
It jumped the shark after Volume 6, I think.
Because they LaQuanda asked for more money. Yeah. They didn't match her price.
Right.
It was all about LaQuanda.
It was.
I don't know why they didn't.
Yeah.
They can't see.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
Tim Cook's giving a presentation in about 5 minutes at the Goldman Sachs Technology and Internet Conference. Audio is available at apple.com/quicktime/conference if you would prefer to listen to that. And I don't know how we can do it. Maybe listen in with half an ear. I don't know. We'll pay attention to it if he says anything important.
We could do the UN simultaneous translation.
And sometimes what's the information that?
But just that ineffective tone. And the now, importance of Apple throughout education has historically been one of innovation. In the third quarter.
Sucking the emotion out of every conversation since 1962. Apple shares went over $500 on Monday. Any shock at all?
They're on their way to being $500 billion.
They're
company.
Bigger than Google plus Microsoft combined.
They're bigger than the GDP of Sweden.
They're bigger than Sweden.
So here's the question is when does Apple's value hit $1 trillion?
What does their stock price need to be to make it a trillion?
1,000? Or maybe a little more, 1,100?
Yeah, more than,
1,100 right now?
Wow, look at this. This is the, this week's, wow. Let's look at the, is this 5 days? Yeah, this is 5 days.
Go for a year.
Let's look at 1 month. You want to see a year? Look at this. We're just looking at the financial, the stock price. Now, this is, again, this is stock price.
Look at 10 years.
just as an example, as a comparison, you can actually buy an iPad for less money than a single share of Apple stock now.
Wow, that's really interesting, isn't it? By the way, the red line is Dell. Shall I add HP?
You think that maybe Apple one day, if they really keep a grudge, if they're going to buy Dell just to make the CEO dance like a monkey?
You know, this, and I think this right here, this is right here where Michael Dell, right at this point where Michael Dell said, sell your Apple stock, Apple just give the money back to the shareholders. It was right about there. Oh, wow. 4,000% growth.
You know what else looks just like that chart is recent comparisons between the, I think it was profit or revenue, of the handset market. Whereas the overall handset market, when you don't count Apple, has been flat for like a decade.
Yeah.
And all of the growth has been Apple.
Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is the orange bar. Basically, that can't, it's flat since 2001. I buy index funds because I feel it's safer. Boy, am I making a mistake. Here's the NASDAQ compared to Apple. Okay. There you go.
And I think that people think that, what else can they do to keep this going? Cause you have to keep growing.
Cars. That's what I'm saying. Cars.
Well, I think there are many things. There's China.
Toasters? China. China's huge.
Able to actually import their iPads into China.
Because then there's this company that has the trademark, right?
They'll work all that out. But, I mean, if you look at the penetration of Apple stuff into China, it's not very high. And
that just means opportunity. I mean, look at they had to close the Apple stores because, there were people throwing eggs at the Apple store because they couldn't get the iPhone 4S. I mean, there's clearly demand in China, is there not, Mike?
There is huge demand, yeah. And I still believe in the iPad Nano, and I think that kind of thing would be huge in a place like China, where once you saturate, China. The way to think of China is that there's like a first world about the size of the United States within China, and then there's the rest of China, which is kind of like the third world.
Right.
Once you saturate the rich urban people, then you got the rest of China, which is, another 750 million people or something. All of that is all in Apple's future. And, again, Apple's brand is just golden in China. They got TVs, the whole world of TVs, the whole world of content. The education and publishing market is all in Apple's future. And I really believe in the future of touchscreen desktops, which I think is going to completely revolutionize the hardware business. Right now, how much time did we spend today talking about things that are not Macs? Well, all of it.
There's
right?
not much to talk about in the Mac world. I mean, exactly. It's all about touch.
But I think once they have the desktop iPad type of device with, with desktop power, but a multi-touch display, I think it's going to be a whole new market for, and very lucrative market for Apple.
Scoble said something on Twitter on Sunday, and a number of people said that can't be true. He says, I talked to General Electric. They're replacing their desktops with iPads. Are we hearing corporations replacing?
Yeah.
You have the Air Force going 18,000 iPads.
I understand the Air Force because it's flight manuals, but really, could you replace a person who's doing spreadsheets or...
But a lot of them aren't doing spreadsheets. That's the whole thing, is that a lot of people are just sales guys that are making contacts, and it's easier to, you know, that's all they're using is the dashboard functions. I mean, if you look at, you know, one of the companies we work with a lot of, Salesforce.com, if you look at their application on the iPad, is amazing. And you can keep track of a lot of what's going on in your company and so on and so forth. You don't need...
Poor Ottawa Paul, who must work for RIM, keeps saying things like, but the playbook does spreadsheets. Paul, actually, they're not buying playbooks. I'm sorry, Paul.
It was interesting. A couple months ago, I was actually talking to an IT manager who works for like a Fortune 500 company, who was saying that he's not replacing iPads, laptops with iPads across the board, but he identified several divisions of that company for which, just in administrative costs alone of keeping these things running, buying 900 iPads was going to pay for itself within 2 years.
And the security salesman
devices that they can't really mess around with is just a really
training.
Good
and what's amazing is that it's exactly why they used to use PCs, was because they had so much admin control over the boxes, and why they didn't like Macs was because people could futz with them. and now now you have the iPad is a perfect solution for for corporations, because they can they can lock it down a fair bit.
There's a conventional wisdom about enterprise and business computing that is somewhat skewed in my view, which is that whenever you talk about enterprise computing, you always talk about the needs of the enterprise. You need security, you need to access legacy databases, you need to do all this stuff, you need, and it goes on and on. And this mindset is supported by the people who provide, the overly priced, high margin solutions for these types of activities. But a terminal, a computer, a desktop computer, is an interface between a human being and the enterprise. And to ignore the human being part, which is always the most complicated and expensive part of that proposition, is what's wrong with how we think about enterprise computing. Good the point. Reason enterprises are embracing the iPad is because it works really well for the human being.
Humans
sitting
like
there.
It, yeah.
Yeah, it's intuitive. They don't need a lot of tech support. It's inexpensive.
They're still going to have computers. I mean, for instance, for backup, for syncing, for loading. But it'll be the IT department and maybe a few specialized areas where they need, a 30-inch display or whatever it is. Hey, we got to take a break. Okay. Let's talk about backup, actually, since we're talking about enterprise. Backup
speak of the devil is
absolutely key. And if you're on a desktop computer of any kind, Mac or PC, you need to back it up.
Back up at all.
Yeah, I know. Because you, why?
I just like living on the edge. I don't think that I don't like to back anything up, because then I would have to worry about it later.
Everything's very transient. You're like one of those people that you don't have anything of value. That way, you don't have to worry.
I'm like that man with like the one day memory.
Alex doesn't play by society's rules.
No. Well, for those of you who do have valuable,
your precious laws, but he'll get the job done.
All those photos I take, I only need them for today.
For those of you who do have valuable stuff on your computers, can I recommend Carbonite.com, the best way to back up your Mac or PC if you're stuck using one of those? For less than $5 a month, you could back up everything on your internal drive automatically whenever you're connected securely. It uses SSL, and you can add additional encryption if you want, so nobody can see what the data is. And you could try it free right now for 15 days. Absolutely. You don't even need a credit card. You just need the offer code MacBreak. Go to Carbonite.com. They do now have, because the $59 a year plan is for everything on your internal drive, but they do now have plans for people who want external drives, for people with business needs, multiple computers and so forth. So they have a variety of plans. But do go and take a look at what they can offer you. And I have a feeling for a laptop, it's a desktop, the $59 a year is great. Because it's just all safe. You can check into it anytime from any computer by logging into your Carbonite account. Works on your iPhone, your iPad, too. There's your stuff. It's cloud storage for less than $5 a month and backup. And it just does a great job. I want you to try it right now, free for 15 days. If you decide to buy, use MacBreak as the offer code. Again, you'll get 14 months for the price of 12. Unless you're like Alex Lindsay and have nothing of value on your computer. No pictures, no financial records.
Back in the old days when I didn't actually... So for us...
No love letters.
Of course I'm being facetious.
Oh.
In our company, it's pretty much two places in the cloud for the most important stuff.
Yeah, actually, you're the king of backup. You really are.
A little nutty.
Is important because if there's a fire here at the brick house, you lose everything. But if you have it in cloud, at least your data is secure, right?
Yeah, and the things that are most important, my family photos, everything else are in the cloud. And and the as well as in two different places, you know, to back up. But I remember there's a movie that I made with my daughter, 15 years ago or whatever.
Yeah,
and
what was that?
But the original footage, I didn't back up, or I didn't put it on a couple different drives, and now I just have the 320 by 240
version.
I have
a video of my son reading for the very first time. It was 2001, and it was the earliest days of digital cameras. I had an Olympus camera, and I just happened to have it when he was reading for the very first time, and I took it's a 15-second video. If I lost that, it would break my heart. So I have that just like you, everywhere.
Yep.
Carbonite.com, thank you very much. Make sure you try it. Thank you for your support, Carbonite. I'm going to have dinner with David Friend, the CEO, on Wednesday. I'm excited. He's a very nice guy. Apple, which I think you arguably can say created the app economy. Yes?
Yes.
Get some credit creating in 4 years 466,000 jobs, according to TechNet.
I think that's actually competitive with the entire U.S. economy.
It is. I think more jobs were created by Apple than by President Obama in the last 4 years. I don't know if that's true, but it's certainly 500,000 jobs is nothing to sneeze at. But it does include, by the way, Android apps, Facebook apps, and the other apps. The app economy has just grown. In fact, it is now the second largest technology job out there. Internet publishing is there, electronic shopping, wireless telecom, software publishers, then app economy, and then custom. This is interesting. The number one category creating more than 600,000 jobs is custom computer programming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that must be for business, writing specialized software.
Building specific things for, I mean, so.
For hedge funds?
Well, I mean.
Derivatives?
Yeah, I mean, it's just doing what would seem like a very simple process for the government or for a large corporation. It's like $10 million.
Learn COBOL.
Everything's $10 million.
Learn COBOL or Fortran. Here's the growth of the app economy since December 2008. It's pretty good. So anyway, I think that's something, I don't know, just to acknowledge, to mark. Makes a difference. Speaking of RIM.
Mike, we can't hear you, just in case you're wondering.
Mike, are you speaking?
I am speaking.
Oh, hi, Mike.
I can hear you now.
Do you have anything you'd like to say?
I do. The chart you showed about the economy, first of all, most of the people who are employed in making apps would be employed making something else if the iOS.
Yeah, they'd be writing derivatives programs in Visual Basic for.
But what's interesting about, and it also doesn't tell you the jobs are lost because something has been made more efficient with an app that you used
That's
to
a good point.
Somewhere else. But I think what it really shows you is there's always a knee-jerk desire for manufacturing to take place in the United States instead of China. This always confuses me. Things like the iOS platform and all of the apps from all the platforms and software development in general and all that kind of work, that's high-paid, high-skilled, wonderful type of labor. I heard somewhere, and maybe it was on this show, you guys can tell me, is that the amount of money for each iPhone purchase that goes to China to pay everybody involved in China is $10.
Wow.
And the vast majority of it is spent on wages in the United States. So why is there a desire for sweatshops to exist in the United States?
We don't need that. Apps are the new sweatshops. No, but I think if I were, if I'm talking to kids in high school, I'd say learn iOS or learn Java, learn code because you can make a job. You know, I'm really curious how many of those 466,000 jobs were for companies or were individuals. You know, half of them, I bet, were individuals.
It reminds me of the whole outsourcing, offshoring mania that took place a few years ago. Everybody was stressing out about all the jobs being lost to India. And then when the facts came in, and you realize that most of the money spent on offshoring is spent by countries outside the United States offshoring to the United States.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And the reason is that the high dollar, you know, the consulting firms, the big, you know, the expensive types of offshoring happens in the U.S., and it's the horrible tech support for vacuum cleaners and stuff that takes place in India. Why do we want that? I mean, India, there's some companies in India that do a great job with that stuff. They're better at it. They speak English better. And let them have it. It's a wonderful globalization. It has benefits.
Well, and I think that one of the things that this is a little bit of a This Week in Tech thing, but when we see like budgets coming out that are really talking about building more roads and building more infrastructure, what we really need to be doing is building more fiber. You know, we need to make sure that small towns have 100 megabit connections and you know, or gigabit connections, not getting more asphalt between the two towns. What we need is more fiber between the towns and people having more access to that, because that will grow the economy much faster than putting more asphalt on the ground. You know, and I think that when we see stats like this, it's pointing towards the economy that we should be pushing people towards, not, you know, continuing to prop up the past.
Exactly. Exactly. Moving right along here. Anybody listening to Tim Cook? Anything interesting? I think I've got Tim Cook playing.
Locations are supply chain. And we partner with local colleges to provide courses like English and entrepreneurship and computer skills and the like. More than 60,000 employees have attended these classes.
Oh, you know what they're talking about.
Which is pretty
iTunes
amazing
U.
When you think about it. If you could take all of these employees and move them to one location, it would be a campus population larger than Arizona State.
It's kind of talking about the same thing we're talking about, really, which is jobs created by this new economy. I think that,
well, what he's talking about there, though, is moving up iTunes U open to, you know, making it more available for corporations. Because I mean, right. There was a corporation that I was just talking to that they're standardizing on iPads because of the iBooks Author, because they're going to be able to put all their training into it,
and they great can have, education.
Every manager can be building books on how their processes get done, and it's available for everyone quickly.
Right.
When they need to update it, they just update that page, and it updates across every iPad. You know, it's a very compelling story for, you know, for using an iPad in a corporation.
So what could possibly be of interest to Apple, Microsoft, and RIM, all three, to band together and spend millions of dollars
billions of dollars together,
Microsoft, RIM, and Nortel. I mean, I gave it away. And Microsoft, they bought the Nortel patents. The Department of Justice has approved that acquisition, along with an approval of Google's acquisition of Motorola. So, you know, what it really is chess pieces, isn't it? We're moving chess pieces on the board.
Well, it sounded like this was more of a defensive one. I mean, when you actually read a lot of the articles on this, it sounded like what they wanted to make sure of is they didn't get some troll buying it up and then suing them for it. Like, what they wanted to do is, because they're not...
Well, you could say that. I mean, I guess it depends. If there's something really juicy in there you could sue Samsung over, I'm not sure they wouldn't do it.
Possibly. A lot of their statements around it have been that what they want to do is keep those open.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. Oh, we're just protecting our interests. It's mutually assured destruction. So it's what Khrushchev said about building missiles. Nobody's going to say, yeah, it's an offensive weapon, but it is.
It's just an insane byproduct of our even more
crazy,
insane patent process.
Yes,
it's just the this kind of activity is built into the the crazy way that patents are done and approved and so on. So,
well, I would say it's not even just the crazy way patents are done. I'd say the way we handle intellectual property in the United States is reaching bankruptcy.
Wrong.
You know, it's
well,
just like,
and
it is,
these
it is
billions
insane.
Of dollars are essentially wasted.
Yeah.
That could have been put into R&D, could have been all sorts of things, and they're just essentially wasted, even if it's pure defense. And I don't know if you really could say it's pure defense. You know, Apple just is trying to block sales of the Samsung Galaxy Nexus in the United States. They're suing Samsung this week. They sued Samsung over that. You know, Apple is not a shrinking violet when it comes to defending its intellectual property.
This is Steve Jobs' thermonuclear war.
It is.
Against Google, and it's never going to stop. They're going to nickel and dime every Google partner over everything that they can, and it's just...
And they don't need to win. That's what people don't understand, is they don't need to win. All they need to do is create confusion, slow it down.
Yeah.
You know, that's all they need to do while they continue to innovate. You know,
I think it's kind of unfortunate, but there it is. And, you know, it may not just be a bet against Google. Samsung is rapidly emerging as the number two manufacturer of smartphones. I mean, like by a large margin. They're the guy. So it's not a surprise that Apple has been going against Samsung in Australia, in Germany, in the U.S. They're hitting Samsung everywhere they can.
It also bears investigating that Apple is not like most companies of their size. When you look at the companies that rank on their level, not only in the amount of money that they're taking in, but also the awareness across multiple levels of society, can you name many companies that only make really one product? All of Apple's success, all of Apple's monster profits, and all of Apple's power right now is coming just through iOS. When you look at the more traditional companies that are in the top five, top 10 spots, you're looking at companies named like, you know, Orange Tree, and they make pharmaceuticals, they make truck parts, they have they're into telecommunications. Their interests are so spread out that any failure on any one part of their business or any new competition that they can't really address, that's not quite so bad. That doesn't really undermine the entire company. Apple right now, all they have is iOS, and they're the only company that really has their stuff together, fusing mobile, all forms of wireless communications, and even integrating it into the living room and the desktop. But if a sufficiently clever and creative company were to hook up with another sufficiently clever and creative company, one company that has the mobile part of it, another one part has the desktop part of it, and another part of it that simply has, we know how to cut deals with big entertainment conglomerates and big communication companies. It wouldn't take all, I don't think that they're in any, Apple's in any danger in the next 3 or 4 years, but I wonder if 5 or 10 years from now, they're going to be in the Dell position or the HP position, where because they put so much of their effort and their passion into iOS, and they never branched out and never really worked on the next thing, never figured out what they're going to do after iOS. This is the first month in which I've been looking at these numbers and wondering, well, what does Apple have beyond iOS plan? Because they're going to need that plan sometime.
Cars.
Apple, you know, it's interesting. NPD Group just put out a report yesterday that said consumer electronics sales in the U.S. basically flat. $144 billion last year, which is 0.5% less than 2010. But Apple increased 36%. So, in fact, if you take Apple out of the equation, consumer electronics sales tumbled, but Apple... 36%. So you're right. I mean, Apple is the company at this point in consumer electronics. Apple accounted for 19% of all sales dollars of consumer gadgets sold, twice as many as HP.
Mm-hmm. Somebody on Google
Plus
made the point that this is bad for the consumer electronics industry because all of the energy and activity is happening from one company and it's hurting the other companies and so on. And I think it's quite the opposite. The reason Apple is doing so well is that they are giving people what they want. They're right. Making products and services that
they're,
function.
They're showing the way to win.
Exactly. And everybody is now gunning for Apple. And how do you gun for Apple? You imitate them. You reverse engineer the qualities that make them successful, things like simplified branding. These companies like Samsung, quick, name the top 30 brands that Samsung has for phones.
Right.
A lot of these Asian handset manufacturers have horrible branding. They create confusion and buyer's remorse and a paradox of choice among consumers. All that stuff, you know, those companies need to learn from Apple that, you know, put all your energy and resources into a very small number of really great products. Right. And then unify them through services and all that. That's the right way to go. So I think it's great for the industry that. Well,
and I don't think that
teaching everyone.
I don't think that if I don't think we would have had phones the way we have them now, or the competitive race that we have without the iPhone.
Apple is leading by example, but at the same time, let's not forget that they are a cutthroat competitor. Not only with lawsuits, this story just came out that Apple is putting pressure on Pegatron, which makes iOS devices, to stop making ZenBooks for Asus Tech. The Asus ZenBook is a MacBook Air clone.
Here, but the thing is, I think this is actually...
This may not be true. I don't know. It's from
I think it has merit. So Apple figures out how to create their new super thin Airs.
Right.
Then they have these guys build it, and then these guys do the same thing for somebody else. I wouldn't
Pegatron
even give them the option.
Just got iPhone.
No, they're doing the MacBook Airs.
It says
as well.
Pegatron only recently landed iPhone orders and is hoping to assemble
recently,
iPads
but before
too.
That it was building the MacBook Air and now it's building the ZenBook. So it's taking the same formulation that Apple figured out how to do. and basically giving it to somebody else. If I was Apple, I wouldn't even be giving them the option. I would have just taken it.
It's not so much the technology as the experience. I mean, you're not suggesting that Apple didn't. If Apple created new manufacturing procedures, that they didn't patent those and they didn't subject those to such tight licensing that this company can't possibly move forward. It is important that this is a company that's had experience milling unibody aluminum ultralight notebooks like this, but it seems to me a little bit more like they are engaging in bullying tactics, saying if you take an Apple contract, you are never going to be able to work for another for a competitor
if I had a company, I would never contract with someone who's doing exactly the same thing for somebody else ever.
Okay, like, but Pegatron used to be Asus. It's a spin-off
of Asus.
But I'm saying, if they're making something that looks exactly like mine, I would just take the contract away, which is what they're offering to do. I mean, it's just crazy to have someone doing the exact same thing. It means every time you innovate, you're innovating for your competitor. Doesn't make any sense.
I think they may be doing Pegatron a favor, because I think it's very likely that Apple's going to shut down the ZenBook through the courts. And if Pegatron is, you know, well, actually, it wouldn't be doing them a favor. They'd probably still get paid by the manufacturer.
It says
and stuff,
Apple's Mac Airs are manufactured by another company, Catcher Technology. Okay. Pegatron never made Airs. What they are just recently, for the first time, got an Apple contract to make.
Okay, I thought they were making.
So it's not that. Right. It's the Apple saying, hey, you know, we don't want you making stuff for a competitor if you're making stuff for us. Probably not illegal, but a little bit exercising some, a little bullying.
Yeah, but doesn't this remind you of, like, the things that various empire-ish nations used to engage in 100 years ago, where they'd move into a territory, say, well, I know that you have your own economy, I know that you produce your own sort of food, your own sort of products, but we're gonna mess up your economy so that you can only produce items for that we want you to export to us. That makes this whole economy totally dependent on the whims and the financial arrangements they have with this one entity.
Right.
And if this one entity decides that, you know what, we don't want your paper products, we don't want your linen anymore, they move out. Now this whole entity is totally screwed.
But that's not what's happening here. That's not what's happening here at all. If you let's say, for example, I mean, it's a question as to whether or not the ZenBook is a total ripoff of intellectual property.
If it is an actual
theft of intellectual property, then it's not bullying for Apple to oppose that theft at every point that it can.
Okay.
That's fair for Apple to protect its intellectual property.
I think, okay, but so I agree with you, and if we have any disagreement, it's conditional upon whether or not this company is engaging in any theft of intellectual property.
Exactly.
I guess I would say even if it's not, I mean, building something that looks exactly like my product, and I'm just speaking this as a company owner, I just would be like, you know, there'd be a big, you know, if someone that was supplying me stuff was doing that to me, you know, there'd be a big FU letter that came out.
If somebody decided to go out and do this week in, and it looked a lot like Twit, and it had a lot of similar stuff, and maybe they had worked for Twit and, like, got all the ideas from Twit and started another company that was very similar, I wouldn't bother me at all.
My worry is that let's divorce this from what is or is not going on at the company. But in general, I feel as though Apple has a right to control the technology that they developed, that Apple themselves developed for the production of the MacBook Air. They don't have the right to control this company's ability to mill aluminum to specification and ship that as a product.
They just have the right
unless they want to pay this company, we will buy from you a lifetime license on your ability to mill aluminum to really cool tolerances.
But they're not controlling them. They're just saying it's us or them. It's just all they're saying is us or them. They can continue to do those. They're not saying we're going to stop you.
I think that might be kind of, depending on the circumstances, that might be a bullying tactic.
Apple has the right to do business with any other company that it wants for any reason that it wants. And again, that's true whether you or not you divorce it from the intellectual property issue. But in Apple's mind, it is not divorce from the intellectual property. If there is no question that the ZenBook exists because the MacBook Air is successful, and I'm sure that Apple has a hair trigger on that concept. I'm sure that Apple believes that that is a complete theft of their design ideas, of their aesthetic, and their intellectual property. And so, but again, Apple has the Apple. I mean, the, Apple doesn't owe Pegatron any business. They can choose any manufacturer for any reason. So I think when you talk about what companies have the right to do, I think it's fair. I don't think it's bullying at all. I think it just
worries the hell out of me. My worry, and I will underscore this as a worry only, that what next? They're going to say, "I'm sorry, Sharp, you're not allowed to make tablet displays above a certain resolution, or else we'll take."
Well, they're kind of doing that, right?
You're not allowed to make a headphone jack that you can manufacture of high quality for less than 2 cents a part, or else we'll take our business elsewhere. I mean, they're a company that got not only through smart business practices, but through innovation, and it's tactics like this applied not so simply on a step-by-step level, but on a philosophical level. This becomes part of the culture of the way that they do business. This is what turns them into Sony in 8 years. I mean, they had a really cool product. Remember whenever we used to have an iPhone and an iPad? Oh man, I was at a nostalgia Halloween party where people actually had an iPad out instead of using the stuff that the actual innovators are using right now.
It's just
something I'm worried about.
Here's an interesting image. This is from All Things Digital. On the left, the original Android phone, as demonstrated by Sergey Brin before the iPhone came out. On the right, the G1 from HTC, the first Google phone, which came out after, about 4 or 5 months after the iPhone.
Right.
It's called playing hard, and there's no question that Apple has the right.
We'll do a side-by-side picture of the Roku, of the Apple TV
and
before
the Roku
box, and then the Apple TV after the Roku
That's
box.
True. But there's no question that Apple or any company has the right to play hard. It's really more a question of, is it good business? And I, from the pure point of view of consumers, I would prefer to see companies just innovate and not sue each other over intellectual property, because giving us the choice, improving somebody, you know, Android is better because of Apple. That's good for us.
Right.
May not be good for Apple. So I do think that it can be bad for Apple to be overly aggressive.
But I think that in Apple's DNA is the 1980s.
They did
not pay much attention to Windows, and Windows snuck up on them and passed them. And I think that I think that the DNA that Apple has now is that we're not going to have that happen again.
Steve Jobs told me that in 1995. He said, "We let Windows catch up."
Right.
And I think that that was a lesson that he learned, and he determined that shall never happen again.
And I think that he was really attached to Google. I think he was attached to Schmidt. He was attached to Google. He was excited about them. He was excited about partnering with them.
Broke his heart.
And in his eyes, they screwed him.
Right.
And I think that that means that basically they will attack Android at every moment. But I think that in general, they're going to attack anything that tries to catch up with them, because they've seen that picture before and it wasn't a good one. They've already seen this movie and they're not going to, you know, they're determined not to have that happen again.
Some good news for independent artists. TuneCore, which collects royalties for music artists, just got a check from Apple for $10,000 for iTunes Match. And as TuneCore says, this is money that no one would have ever seen. But thanks to iTunes Match, some money is accruing to artists who otherwise probably would have made nothing.
We're sending out a lot of checks for $4.
Yeah, $10,000 is not a lot of money. This is Eddie Q in a very poor, dark picture of Eddie Q receiving a special Grammy honoring Steve Jobs. The Grammys decided not to do that on national television, but apparently in the dark in a ballroom somewhere in Muncie. It was the other Grammys. It was a special merit award in recognition of his contributions to the field of music with the iPod and the iTunes Music Store. Yeah, like he kind of saved the industry, just, you know. And finally, very good news. You've heard, of course, a lot about Apple, its manufacturing, a lot of controversy over those factories. Apple has now announced that they're going to audit the factories where Apple technology is made overseas. This outside organization will be auditing iPhones, iPads, and other Apple factories. Remember, last month they gave out the name of their suppliers. So they're following up, and I have to say, good on them.
I really think that this is an effect of Tim Cook versus Steve Jobs as well. I mean, I think that Tim Cook is much more responsive to philanthropy, much more responsive to Apple's public image. I think Steve Jobs got away with a lot because of his reality distortion field. And I think that Tim Cook is moving Apple forward into a more holistic, you know, type approach to their PR.
They chose the Fair Labor Association. Some labor groups say this is not exactly an independent organization. You know what? Hey, they're doing something, and I think that's a good thing.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. Applaud. Applause for Apple for at least paying attention to this. We're going to take a break. Your picks, the iOS tips, your Lion tips, all still to come as we continue with Mac Break Weekly. Mike Elgin from Elgin.com, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core, and, of course, Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times talking. Is there any Mac news at all? No.
I love my Mac.
You know, people complain because we call it Mac Break Weekly, and people complain. They say, well, where's the Mac news? You know what? It's not us. It's Apple. If Apple doesn't do anything for the Macintosh, who are we?
My only Macintosh news is that I would say that I will never, ever own a laptop that does not have an SSD in it again.
After I love it. One. Isn't it awesome?
I have a big SSD drive, and it's just like suddenly everything just happens quickly.
It's so fast.
I go back to my old computer, and I thought it was broken. I realized it was not broken. It was just a...
It's just a hard drive.
Just a hard drive.
Just shows you I.O. is as important, at least as important as CPU.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speed of your input, output. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Smile Software. We had Gene McDonald on the show the other day. I love Gene. I love Smile Software. If you go to smilesoftware.com/MacBreak, you can take a look at their newest product. App award winner, best app at Macworld Expo, PDF Pen.
So I use PDF Pen on the Mac every day.
Now for the iPad. Ooh. And Gene gave us a little demo. It's very impressive. Just $10. You can open PDFs. You can edit PDFs. You can sign PDFs, fill out applications, email them back. No more printing out of PDFs. No more faxing. Fix typos, make corrections, resize or delete images. And I love this, automatically store those PDFs in the cloud so you have them on your Mac and your iPad. They use Dropbox, Evernote, and Google Docs. So this is just a fantastic way to manage PDFs on your iPad. Of course, who else would do a better job than Smile Software? These guys are brilliant. I use Text Expander and PDF Pen on the desktop.
That's how I do all my contracts.
It's fantastic.
Come in and I sign. I just bought it.
$10, well worth it. It's available in the App Store. PDF Pen for iPad, brand new and deservedly one of the best of show at Macworld Expo. Oh,
look at that.
SmileSoftware.com/MacBreak if you want to find out more and then fire it up on the iPad. And I love how it integrates with the PDF Pen on the Mac.
And it does something that I really
look
like.
What he's doing. He's messing up.
I messed it all up, but I was playing with it. I was looking at the responsiveness. So one of the things that it does also is it does it smooth, like when you're doing your signature. It smooths it out.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't do that.
And no. It has and then you see pixels, like, which is pixels a giveaway.
And, yeah, exactly.
It's a dead giveaway.
It's really nice.
Sorry?
I was just trying to show what he was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
About right
there you scooch over. There
so you
go.
Can have.
So you draw your signature. Actually, I keep my signature in the library, but the first time you draw it, you could draw it, and it will smooth it out.
Yeah,
so there
so
you
I
go.
Can just do like, you know.
Hello, my name.
Watch this.
It's a little jaggy, and it just smoothed it out.
And then it's hard to see on that screen, but it's cool.
It's very cool.
I love it.
Thank you, Smile. SmileSoftware.com/MacBreak. Now, time. Do you want to do an iOS tip,
sure.
Alex? Go to it.
So this was from Ron Brinkman, my friend Ron Brinkman, who gave us this tip for your phone. So what you may not know is, of course, you can tap it and you know get it to get different exposures. When you're taking pictures on your iPhone,
right,
move it over your keyboard.
There we go. So
and down a little bit. There you go.
So I can of course tap it and it's going to focus there. If I hold it, it will. You'll see it blink. See how that little blink happens there.
So that was exposure, as
and
opposed
that will
to
lock your. No, that'll lock
that locked
your exposure and your focus
both
on whatever that is. So
that's
it's not
very good.
So if you turn up if we turn it somewhere else and I click on it once, it's gonna of course get that exposure. But if
right.
I move it, it's gonna immediately change that exposure.
Right. See,
if I go back here and hold
double
it,
double tap, hold
see
it.
See that?
Got
right
it.
There. And once it does that, now it's gonna that exposure and focus is gonna stay the same.
I had no idea.
That's a great little tip. Thanks, Ron.
Very handy. How about a Mac OS tip from Andy Anatko?
This is indeed a Lion tip. This is more of something that you have in your back pocket when your Mac starts to screw up. A friend of mine emailed me the other day because he was trying to save a text edit document and then got one of those really super helpful errors saying that, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to do that right now. No explanation of what the problem is or how to fix it. It was a problem with the permissions on a bunch of files that he had inside his home folder, his personal folder. And most people are familiar with the idea of repairing permissions on your drive. If you go into Disk Utility, there's actually a button that says verify disk permissions and repair disk permissions. These features are supposed to look at the file permissions that are on each file. At a low level, the operating system is allowed or not allowed to touch, modify, delete, move certain files. So if you have a document, for instance, and its permissions have gotten screwed up a little bit at the OS level, and the OS thinks, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to open this anymore. I'm not allowed to modify this anymore. This is a locked file. That's how you can get some really bizarre behavior. Now, unfortunately, though, Disk Utility only works on OS directory sort of stuff. It's designed to prevent screwy behavior on the OS level. It's not designed to fix problems on files that are inside your home folder. With Lion, Apple actually hid a really cool home folder repaired file permissions utility, and they made it really difficult to use, and I don't know why they did that. If you ever have the sort of problems where you think maybe I should start off by fixing the file permissions inside my home folder, what you have to do is you have to restart your Mac and go into recovery mode. So hold down Command R while you restart. You'll eventually be dropped into that really cool thing that in Lion where it lets you boot off of your recovery partition and run a bunch of utilities. Click on your hard drive. When you go to, this is the sort of thing where I need to actually see it in front of me. So I'm going from a list that I actually typed in to remind me. After you get into there, you get to the repair utility screen after you restart into recovery mode. Go into if you go into the menu bar, you can launch a terminal window. Go into that terminal window and type reset password, resetpassword. That is the reset password utility. But with Lion, they added this extra feature. You will launch into this really cool this macOS app that will allow you to select your hard drive, select a specific user account, and then there'll be a button saying repair disk permissions on this home folder. Click that button, wait a couple of minutes, and then restart, and it will fix your permissions. So obviously, you're probably not writing all this down as I'm saying it. What I'm saying is that remember that this trick exists. Remember that at some point in the future, you'll think, oh, what? How do I do that? Just do a Google search on repair home folder file permissions, and you'll find about four different rundowns of these procedures. I tried it. I gave that tip to that friend of mine who was having the problem, solved it immediately, and probably caught a whole bunch of other files that were going south for some reason, for the same reason.
How do permissions get messed up in any way?
God knows. We forget that we're no longer working with DOS 3.2 on the Apple II, where things happen in a really predictable, linear, one thing at a time fashion. An operating system really is like a giant living organism, and one electron bouncing off of the wrong cell in exactly the wrong way can cause this creature to die in 3 years from cancer. And we will never be able to track back that first inciting incident that caused the problem to create. I remember 4 years ago, I recognized that was one of my many areas of ignorance. And I asked, well, how do file permissions get screwed up? And then two people talked to me for about 2.5 hours total. After 2.5 hours, they got to, well, and that's one of the 18 different reasons why it could happen. But no, you'll never know why.
It could be cosmic rays.
Because mankind is born into trouble just as surely as the sparks fly upward. It was right there in the New Testament all along.
I'm surprised at how often it actually fixes things. Like, I'm always like, this is all.
It's like one of the few things that can go wrong on the Mac, actually. Yeah. There is support.apple.com. There's a very good long article that includes this tip and many others on repairing permissions. It's article HT2963.
I remember that.
Want to become an expert on permissions. And now it's time for our picks. Mr. Elgin, I don't know if we asked you. Do you have a pick for us?
I do indeed. And you guys, I think you guys are way too useful and practical. And in fact, I've probably gotten more of my software that I use from this show than anything else. So I'm gonna break with tradition and show you something completely useless.
Good.
Now, this is a musical instrument created by a jazz saxophonist named Bassist Trump, and it was his master's thesis at the University of Arts in Berlin. And wow. I'm not a big fan of musical instruments on the iPad per se, especially the invented ones. But this one is something beyond a musical instrument. It's called the Orpheon. Let me see if I can hold that up and see if you can see that. You're seeing the reflection out my window there, but I guess you can't see it. But you can hear it. So it's a bunch of Venn diagram type circles. And each one is a musical note, but the sound is quite hypnotic. So see if you can hear this.
Ooh.
Sounds like a Japanese, kabuki theater.
Walk upon the rice paper. So
it does all the, yes, exactly. And there are multiple, I mean, you can't see this, right? Let me,
you can kind of see it. There's a bunch of circles.
Yeah. But you can change it to, you know, 5 circles, 3 circles, 50 circles or something like that. And for just something to be sitting on your, and you can change the tone and the sound, is a very customizable. What's great about this, you know, Andy and I were talking before we started the show about the value of the ukulele as a kind of a distraction between, you know, where we're waiting for something to download or load or something like that. And this also does that function. You can have it sitting there and you can sit there and just, you know, it's kind of zone out, and you can actually play real music. I can't. You can, but I can't. You can do chords and all that kind of stuff. So it's just a really cool $5 app that's just fun brain candy to sit there and zone out on.
I like that.
Yeah.
How do you spell it? O-R-P?
Yeah. It's O-R-P-H-I-O-N.
O-R-P-H-I-O-N. Look, Alex has also bought that.
This is a very expensive show for me. It's cost me $15, and I've only been sitting here.
It sounds like it's pentatonic, so you can't play the wrong note, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow, that's so cool.
They have a jazz chord thing.
That's neat.
It's awesome.
Ophion.
Your next Bunraku puppet performance.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You're going to do the puppets, Andy, and we'll play the music here. I feel and then you have to have something go clock. Oh my God, that scarred the table.
Then the trickster clocks return to Johnny Ives' office.
One more thing. All right, I got a pick. It's this. It's a nicely milled piece of aluminum. This is the...
I can't make that. Nope. Apple owns milled aluminum.
Ah, damn it!
Go to hell.
This cannot be made at Asus. This is called the Magnus. And actually, I need to borrow an iPad to show this off. You got one there, Mr. Alex Lindsay? This comes from 10-1. They do great stuff. You know, they did that wonderful pen that we loved. This is an iPad stand.
So I actually can't get mine out of
It's about $50. Well, what's great about it, we saw this at Macworld Expo, actually, and they sent me one. This has the magnets here that take advantage of the magnets on the iPad. So what you can do is it will, you can see it doesn't have much of a lip, but it's sufficient because of the magnets. It'll slot right in there. Now, it doesn't show multiple angles. It's really kind of an upright thing. You couldn't type on the iPad for that, but it'd be good for a photo frame, that kind of thing, or a display. It's a good corporate use of the iPad. That's the 10-1 design Magnus, and I believe it's $50. Let's see. You ordered the Pogo Sketch Pen. You might as well get that while you're there. $49.95. It is in stock. It's for the iPad 2 only because it uses the magnets.
I would show it to you, but I can't get my case off.
Well, that's a good case. Whatever good case. You have. Like, oh, that's the Apple case.
It's a spec case.
Oh, it's spec. Yeah. No, that's fine. I've showed it on other shows before. It just clicks right in. It's really nice. Andy Yanako, your pick, sir.
Actually, I have a mini pick and a major pick. The mini one is for people who are actually listening live today. We all know and love the Snapseed photo editing app for iOS and the iPhone. Just really damn simple, just to take any picture you've taken and just enhance it and make it nice to desktop quality, not even just mobile posting to Twitter quality. Snapseed is apparently is for free today.
I love Snapseed.
It's free. Both the iPad app and the iPhone app. Go download for
it's from Nick Software. Well worth it.
Yeah, run.
And I paid $10
for it. Yeah,
so.
Run.
Yeah.
So I believe that's today only. So if you're not listening to this on Valentine's Day, sorry. I'm sorry. Your heart is broken.
Sorry.
I have a really enthusiastic pick on the iOS and macOS side. It's iDraw. if it's a by Indeo, if you go to indeeo.com. And it is the closest thing I've ever found to an app that I've loved ever since like 1985, 1986. It is a draw. It's like it really is Mac Draw for Mac OS Lion and for the iPad. It is a really cool sketch drawing app that allows you to draw vector graphics without necessarily being an architect, without necessarily knowing what you want to accomplish, and without necessarily having too much skill. But it will allow you to draw anything from like a floor plan to a book cover design to actual freeform art. You can integrate pictures into it. It allows you to have a multiple templates, multiple guidelines. Obviously, the Mac OS version is a lot more has a lot more features than the iOS version. But the iOS, if there's any sort of a regular drawing that you have to make, it allows you to build libraries not only of existing shapes that you've created and thingamabobs you've drawn, but also libraries of fills and circles and things like that. So you can basically click on anything and suddenly have that really cool purple to blue starburst radiant effect with a drop shadow off of a black 6-point circle. So the desktop version is $29, so much cheaper than anything else that you can get for vector graphics, so much easier than anything you can get on vector graphics. The iPad version is I believe $8.99, and it's so the two apps are really really very compatible. If you've learned how to use one, the things you've learned how to create drawings on each on either app will translate very well to the other. And the more I use my iPad, the more I come to value a tool that's available for both Mac OS and the iPad. I'm still trying really, really hard not to buy a MacBook Air. No matter how much I love it, no matter how much I love the compact size, no matter how much I love having a Mac OS device that's that cheap and that, excuse me, that's that small, I'm convinced that if I'm disciplined, I can simply use my iPad as my field computer and not have to buy a third Macintosh just for the really tiny sort of Mac. So if you really cherish apps like iDraw, where you can have a version, a separate version for iOS, separate version for desktop, but they're very, very compatible, not only with their files, but also the way that they work. It works. It's the iDraw for the iPad. I will also say that a lot of the reasons why I really have to, I feel as though I have to take my MacBook with me when I'm only traveling for 2 days is because I'm flying somewhere to give a talk or give a presentation. And so many times I'll do my final run through of my slides the night before. I'll realize that, oh, you know what? I just read something 2 days ago that would make a really cool thing to add to this. And I don't have the tools on my iPad to build that slide that I need. With iDraw, it works, actually it almost looks so as though the same team that worked on Keynote for the iPad developed this too. I feel as though I can create any graphic, any image that I would possibly need. And because it's all vector graphics, it'll scale up, it'll scale down, it'll rotate, it'll be nice and smooth lines no matter what I do with it. So great, great apps. I would have, they gave me download codes, but I would happily pay for them because I've been using them so much over the past week or two.
That's neat. iDraw.
It's been a very expensive show for me.
Did you buy that too?
$23 so far. Thank you very much.
And by the way, the other program was Snapseed, SNAPSEED.
It is so awesome.
Finally, your pick of the week, Mr. Alex Lindsay.
So I am picking a Kickstarter project.
Oh, good.
So, because I want to see it get done.
So you know, they just had their first $1 million project.
Yeah, this one's not a $1 million project yet, yeah. but it should be, and y'all should help. So, Tony Farley, who is actually one of our oldest, not oldest in age, but longest PixCorps members, is actually building an iBook, an interactive physics iBook. Now, he's a physics teacher at San Leandro High School.
This is what you want.
This is what you want. This is what you want to see, is you want to see teachers building these books, you know, yeah. not just big textbook companies. And Tony is brilliant. He's brilliant. He's one of those teachers that makes a difference for his students. He's made a difference in the PixCorps for a long time.
He didn't ask for a lot. He only asked for
He didn't ask for enough. I don't know what he was going to do.
He's made his goal.
He's made his goal, but we should keep on giving him more money. Because I can tell you, I just know Tony well enough that whatever we pledge into this, he will just do more with it. You know, he's not going to cash in on it. He is so passionate about physics and about media. He also teaches the media. They have been incredible. He basically spearheaded... was part of a team that spearheaded a multimedia program at San Leandro High School. They have like a million plus, you know, theater and everything else. And he's so energetic. And I just, I really highly suggest if you're going to back something in Kickstarter, this is the kind of stuff. I mean, I think that this is a really important
transformational
project. You know, whether it's $5 or $10 or $15, you know, anyway, so that's my pick.
Wow, I love it. Thank you. Kickstarter.com, if you search for interactive physics,
yep.
got me it right away. Yep. So I want the book. I think I could learn something.
Exactly.
Hey, I want to thank everybody. We got to run. So great to have you, Mike Elgin from Elgin Media, Elgin.com. Mike does all his stuff on Google+ and does really exciting, neat stuff. In fact, I saw another post that we should probably have talked about. On your Google+, but I'll leave this for homework, for an assignment for later. If you go to his posts, he's Mike Space Elgin.
There will be a quiz.
Yes. where was it? It was down here. You got lots of hangouts. There's the Apple Breaks $500. Oh, yeah, Carnival. Anyway, I can't remember it. But
very interesting.
But great stuff always down here, I'll tell you. Just go to Elgin.com, ELGAN.
That is correct.
Yes. And he talks about some, really, it's a conversation starter, every single post.
Thank you.
Alex Lindsay's at the Pixel Core. You do stuff live every Thursday. Something coming up at pixelcore.com/live this week?
Yes, we're talking about the new Final Cut update. Multicam.
This is exciting.
This is a big deal.
It shows they're treating this seriously as a pro product.
And I got to say, the guys that I haven't been able to do the multicam because I haven't needed it yet, the guys I talked to said it's a near religious experience. I mean, it is so powerful.
Multicam means you can shoot multiple cams isolated and then switch it, in effect, in Final Cut, as if you're watching
and
live.
The new one handles 64
very fast way to
angles.
Kind of do quick AB editing
with 64 angles.
64 angles. Wow.
If you need that many, you know. So anyway, but definitely check that out.
I'll be watching.
And check out my post on Google+ on education because I went a little nutty.
Are you doing education too?
I talked about education on Google+.
Alex has some very controversial, but I think right on opinions about education.
It's a nutty. It's a nutty post. But I'd love to get your input. So especially if you're in education,
There's a lot of Alex's, but you know what he looks like. There you go. That's his. And Andy Anatko's at the Chicago Sun Times. He's also blogging at CWOB and tweeting at IHNATKO on the Twitterverse. Thank you so much, guys. We really appreciate your participation. It makes the show happen. I thank you for being here. We do the show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 1900 UTC on twit.tv. If you missed the show, you can watch or listen after the fact. We make audio and video versions available for download at all times at twit.tv and on all the major platforms, and of course, including iTunes. In fact, best thing to do, subscribe to one of those versions so you get it each and every week. Twit Photo is coming up next with Catherine, and I think we're going to do a photo shoot. I'm excited. Catherine Hall is here.
Yep. That's a great show.
Yeah, it is. It's really exciting.
I love being on it.
You want to be on it again? We should have you back.
Yeah, I love
you. You host it when I'm not around.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here. Now get back to work. Break time is over.